what I would like to do today is I will share with you very briefly about how Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is addressing the multicultural nature of the church and some of the plans it has undertaken, and which will be a brief presentation. And if you are awake, I will give the presentation probably like 12 minutes. If you go to sleep, then I will cut short and finish it so soon. So I don't want anybody to snore when I'm presenting. Lutheran Church has been in this planet for a long, long time. So let me begin with where Lutheranism began and where we are now. Lutheranism began as a, what I would call a confessional movement within the Roman Catholic Church. One of the things Luther wanted to happen is to make church or religion relevant to the people and to minister to the people within the context they live. That is a product of the Lutheran Reformation, when people began to come to this country and colonize the United States. They brought also their religions. So we got here the Swedes and the Norwegians and the Danes and the Germans and all the folks who brought their religion with them. They brought their pastors, their leaders, and the churches evolved around the communities people ministered. In fact, the early church history, if you look at the church's goal was, for example, the Norwegian Lutherans wanted to do ministry with the Norwegian people. That is where the effort was, to minister to the communities with which they are living and serving. But now, slowly the country has evolved into a broader phase with the African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people becoming a significant part of this country. Actually, more than 21% of the population in this country today is African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. So when the new church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, came into existence in 1988, it set itself a goal which states within 10 years of its existence, at least 10% of its membership will be African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. Now, when they were setting that goal, we had to know what is the state of the church. The predecessor church bodies, the ALC, the LCA, and AELC, total had 1.7% of the membership African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. Today it has increased to close to 2%. So that's where we are at this time. Number two, at the same time, as I shared with you earlier, the population of this country was changed dramatically, and close to 1/4 of the population now is African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. So the goal the church set it to itself was a bold step and also a reasonable step. Now, we may be wondering why the church has to set a goal of reaching out to the four communities especially. Why come up with the plan to reach out to those peoples, to do ministry with African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American? Let me share with you first what I believe to be some biblical foundations for church becoming multicultural. When we think about church, that is church universal, we are talking about a church Catholic. We are talking about a church which has a gospel which reaches out to all peoples. And I do believe the Lutherans do have understood that very clearly. In fact, our mission efforts have been very successful. Our mission effort in Africa has been very effective, and we have one of the fastest growing Lutheran churches, which should be found in Africa. Close to 4.5 million Lutherans live in Africa. And we have been very effective also in Asia. We have close to 4.2 million Lutherans live in Asia, and we have been very faithful to the calling to see the proclamation of the gospel for all people. That is, we as the Lutherans. and we as Christian people. But we have not gone that far yet. And so we had to look back to the scriptures to see how and what God intended the church to do. If you will look at even the life of Jesus, think about where he came from. Jesus, as a Jew, was a Galilean. He's not a Jew from Jerusalem, the pure Jewish community, where the Galileans always have to encounter people who are not Jewish. Either they are the people coming from Greece, or people coming from Egypt, or people who are Gentiles. They have to encounter these people. So when Jesus was talking to his disciples about discipleship or making reaching out to people, especially when he says make disciples of all nations, he was talking about the church, which is evolving, will embrace all cultures and all peoples. And the disciples did indeed understood that very clearly. If you look at Corinthians, where Paul talks about the wisdom and power of God, which embraces all peoples. And then we also see how the church evolved during the day of Pentecost, where the gospel was proclaimed in peoples of all races and all languages in their own language. People heard the gospel. So this is the heritage with which we as Lutherans have come. And when the ELCA began to talk about church becoming multicultural, it also had several issues it needed to confront. Number one, even the naming. How do we want to call the efforts and the work with which we wanted to go? If you may recall, in the old ALC or LCA or AELC, the ministries were called minority ministries. In the American Lutheran Church, there was a staff person responsible for doing minority ministries, where in the Lutheran Church in America, there was a staff person responsible for doing ministry called Minority Concerns. These type of ministries were there. But when the ELCA was coming into existence, there was considerable debate as to how we wanted to be called. The decision was finally made that we will be called a Commission for Multicultural Ministries, mainly because they looked at the term minority, where first of all it is offensive to our Caribbean brothers and sisters, where the dominant community is indeed Hispanic community, so they are a minor majority if you want to look at that. And also there is a theological implication, that is, within the church, in the faith community, there is nothing called a majority and minority. We are all children of God. We are all equal partners in hearing and proclaiming the gospel. So the word was changed into multicultural. And then, if you look at it, then also other terminologies. We have cross-cultural, we have another terminology called intercultural or transcultural. But if you look at those three words, the cross-cultural, transcultural, or intercultural, there's an unequalness. One culture is superior to another culture, or a culture or cultures are inferior to another culture. This dichotomy is there. That is why the word multicultural was used. And so the Commission for Multicultural Ministries came into existence with the new church coming into being. And in 1988, when after the church came into existence, during the ELCA Church Council meeting, one of the members asked how the ELCA is going to address the 10% goal, that is within 10 years of its existence, 10% of its membership will be persons of color, plan, how that is going to be implemented, or how that is going to be developed. People woke up, they said, aha, we have not done anything about this yet, did we? So Bishop Chilstrom appointed first that committee. The committee, if you will look at the sheet as circulated, you will see the people's names under Multicultural Mission Strategy Task Force. The reason I take effort to share with you the people serving in the task force is this. the church has taken this effort rather seriously. Chilstrom chairs the Multicultural Mission Strategy Task Force. That is the only committee or a task force Chilstrom is serving as the chair in the church, because even the ELC, Church Council, is not the chair. Then we have representatives in the task force who were appointed by Bishop Chilstrom, who are executive directors for outreach, for ministry, congregational life, commission for multicultural ministries, and commission for women. Then we have representatives from the conference of bishops, some of the bishops, and also ethnic community leaders are members of the task force. So when the task force first met, they thought that we had to develop a very comprehensive plan and to move forward. So I was the lucky winner. So I was asked to serve as the director for multicultural mission strategy, to develop a strategy for the church. And the timeline was to take it to the 1991 Churchward Assembly for its adoption. The thought was, since the goal was set by a Churchward Assembly in 1987, Constituting Assembly, we wanted to take it to the Churchward Assembly again and say, we think the church ought to do these type of activities in order to achieve the 10% goal. So the first was to develop a plan. What my task was to come up with a design to how we wanted to develop a strategy. So I looked at the ELCA constitution and said, if we have six areas we identify, we could pretty much cover all the ministries which are happening church-wide. So we developed six working groups. They are communication, congregational resource development, social ministry, leadership development, ministry development, and theological development. I will share with you in depth later on what in each area we are trying to accomplish. And then six working groups were appointed. Their task was to study the church and to see what are the resources which are available at this at now, and how we could reshape or reposition ourselves to achieve the 10% goal. So these six working groups are working on developing plans. Now all they will finish their work in end of November of this year. And once I get their copies, I will write a final report and take it to the church council in April of this coming year, and then to the Churchward Assembly for adoption. So this is how this whole thing is evolving. Now after sharing this, I will stop for a while and ask for some clarifications. All right. Another thing we realized that was, yes, we have working groups working on this, but ministry is happening in congregations. That is where you see change, you see activity happening. So what we did was, we did consultations in 25 different cities across ELCA, where I met with pastors and lay people from the immediate area and talked to them about what they thought the church ought to do in order to achieve the 10% goal. That was a very fruitful event. Now, after I prepared a final report of all the things I heard from the folks, I sent them to the working groups for them to look at when they develop specific strategies. Those people who participated in those consultations we told them that we will give them a periodic report on the progress being made, and also as the drafts of the strategies are developed, we have been sending copies to the people who participate in those consultations for their review and reflection, so that our hope is that we could get a good feedback from people who are directly involved in congregational ministry with African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people. So far, what I have shared is very bureaucratic and kind of a, you know, this is how this big animal looks like. So I will stop there, and if you have any questions or concerns, any comments, I will welcome that. Then I will go on to talk about the specific areas. Yeah.
Has every congregation received this report?
This one?
Yeah.
This one was sent to all the ELCA congregations in their action packet. And also the blue one, that was also sent to all the ELCA congregations. Yes, we are done. That's all the things I shared with you so far. Make sense?
Does Is Sylvia Pate now replacing Christine Crist on that committee?
No, we do not know. Probably it may be Carol Smith from Commission for Communication. Yeah.
Of that 1.87% of the membership,
yes.
How much of that do you think is just because Lutheran churches put ministers in communities or send them to foreign places, or how much of that do you think is actually in the United States, or is that, did it say in the
United States? Oh yeah, that's U.S.
That's
U.S. U.S.
Okay.
We have 1.87%, and that is the U.S. membership. That transfers to close to 100,000 ELCA membership is African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How realistic do you think is the 10% goal?
Okay.
Given that 2 years have gone by and only 0.3% growth
yes.
has occurred.
Yeah. B. One of the things we will be making recommendation is that we will be when the Constituting Assembly, they said 10 years, that began in 1988, so 1989. And we will be asking the church to push that a little further to the beginning of the adoption of the strategies. That will be the 91, so 91 to 2001. Now, that's one. Number two, is this a realistic goal? It is, because we have around 11,000 congregations in the ELCA, right? Of the 11,000 plus congregations, around 432 congregations have predominantly African American or Asian or Hispanic or Native American membership. Around 3,000 congregations are located in communities, what we call transitional communities. That is a community where the population is more than 50% African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. So the congregation have a strong potential. Now, that number three is in the parochial reports, which is the report the congregation sent annually to the synod office. The parochial report in 1989 said that close to 2,300 congregations, 2,300 congregations in the ELCA said they are making effort to do ministry with African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American people. Number four, this is my final one. Why I believe it is an achievable goal. In the past 16 years, both our predecessor church bodies and ELCA is declining in membership, steadily declining in membership. And the only area we are seeing growth in membership is with the African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people. In 1988, we received around 13,000 new members from the four communities. In 1989, it was 8,000 new members. And finally, that's the number five. Finally, the growth we are seeing is the 8,000 and the 13,000 African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American members we receive are from adult baptism or from coming from another denomination. They are coming through their confirmation program, not through baptism. So that's also a healthy and helpful sign. So these are some of the signs which gives us some hope that this is an achievable goal. That's a good question. I gave you all the answers, isn't it? Yeah.
I suspect this is kind of a touchy question, but the term, you said something already about the term multicultural. I know there has been some discussion about what is included in multicultural ministry, particularly on the issue of primary language other than English. Could you just talk a little bit about that, why you refer specifically to those four communities?
That's right.
Others are excluded. Why is that?
Okay. The when the Constitution was being prepared, the word originally was persons of color. That is the only term they used. Then the word and primary language other than English was added, mainly because of the Hispanic community. Hispanic community said, look, when we talk of persons of color, that to a lot of Hispanic, that does not include us. And number two, even you cannot even say that's a cultural group. So they said we had to include the word persons of color or primary language other than include that primary language other than English includes us. So the Constitution was written that using the term persons of color or primary language other than English. Now, in 1988, what happened was a lot of synods and committees began to interpret that word to include people who are coming from Europe, or people are first generation Germans, or now with them so sweet. They said that also impresses everybody, and especially when we got parochial reports, there was a lot of confusion about the terminology, and they put those numbers together. So the ELCA Church Council took up, asked Office for Research Planning and Evaluation to make a recommendation on the whole terminology, persons of color and primary language other than English. So the recommendation went to the Church Council stating that one of the reasons we are using the terminology is church's commitment is to reaching out and ministry with African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people. And number two is the church does have another category, what's called special interest conferences, because whether you know that or not, almost all white ethnic communities have, from the predecessor church bodies, special interest conferences. They have their own conferences and associations or caucuses. So that is still in the Constitution. They work very closely with the Office for Ecumenical Affairs and Division for Global Mission, mainly because of the relationship those the special interest conferences have with their native countries and the church bodies. So that is why the explanation was given later on to mean, when we use the word persons of color, primary language other than English, or multicultural, we mean African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. That's what probably you may have not noticed also. When I am talking today here, I always went on to explain the whole thing, you know, African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American, rather than saying persons of color, because just to make that clarity. So that's what.
But when you talk about a plan for a multicultural church, you're not, that use of the term multicultural isn't limited to those four groups, but is about the, how shall I say it, the whole church, which includes other groups. So that the goal is not to have a commission always for multicultural ministry that takes care of these groups and then there's the rest of the church, but rather the goal is to have the whole church be multicultural and included in that mix everyone. And am I understanding that right?
Let me repeat what I really heard, what I heard, because the church's goal is very specifically to increase 10% of African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American.
Right.
Are you with me? Okay. The multicultural mission strategy effort is also to address very specifically to reaching out to African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American. Now, when we, the reason, the theological foundations and reasons when we give, we say that mainly because gospel is inclusive, gospel is universal, and the church, that is why God has put the church on the United States and Caribbean to minister to all people, and we should be doing more. We should have an intentional effort to do this ministry.
Right. And when that ministry is done, the church will be different.
That's correct.
It won't be separate but equal, to use an old phrase. Will be transformed.
Right.
Okay.
We'll be talking about that tomorrow. Tomorrow's title is, I think, the future of multicultural church or something like that.
So the plan has, in a sense, two parts. One is reaching out to members of those communities, and the other is the transformation of
the church. That's right. Which will be happening with this plan. We will talk about that when we work on the 6 working group areas. That's very helpful comment. Yeah.
Of these 11,000 congregations, do you know how many of them are located in communities that have 10%?
That's what I said. We have close to 3,000 congregations. which are sitting in transitional community. That is a community where at least more than 50% are up are African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American. And then almost two-thirds of the congregations within 2 mile radius has a significant African American, Asian, Hispanic, or Native American population.
Two-thirds of the 11,000.
Yep. Right. Yep.
Within 2 miles?
2 mile radius.
Well, my impression of the ELCA must be entirely wrong then, because when I think of the Midwest, when I think of Pennsylvania, when I think of New York, it seems to me that a large majority of the communities that the Lutheran Church traditionally has been in have been very white communities. Mm-hmm. Is that not true?
No.
But if you're in Minneapolis or St. Paul, there's an enormous Native population, a big Spanish-speaking population of people who come out of the migrant stream, mm-hmm. One of the largest Southeast Asian refugee communities, and if you think of the heartland of rural kind of Lutheranism, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Madison, lots of those little cities have, Moorhead, have that kind of demographics. It's surprising but true.
Even, for example, let me, which state in the United States has the largest number of Asian membership in the Lutheran Church? Which state has the largest number?
California.
What's number two?
Minnesota.
You got it right. That's
what?
True. But you will not believe that, mainly because of the ministry with Southeast Asian people. Used to be, Minnesota used to be number one.
There's more Asian Americans in St. Paul than there are African Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you will be surprised to look at the place where the churches have been. But the sad news is there are a lot of Lutheran churches sitting right in the middle of probably 90% ethnic membership, but not even a single member in the congregation. That has been our biggest problem. Any more? Jody?
Fred, just back on Deanne's point for just a second, just recalling some of the conversations you were involved in, some of the rest of us, about the Multicultural Commission and the makeup of the uh-huh. Multicultural Commission, whether or not that should be a place with four desks,
or
right?
five.
Or five, right? In other words, whether that ought to be a place where African Americans, Asians, Hispanics, and Native Americans can accumulate power and serve their own people, or whether it ought to be a place that also has a white desk of some kind, right? That in some way or other models a different kind of church.
Yep. Right? Yep.
That was a rich set of discussions and interesting in lots of ways.
Let me go. Thank you, Jody, for raising that, because some of us do believe that that's the way the true multicultural church ought to look like, and a commission for multicultural ministries ought to look like, including myself. I strongly believe in that. And it was brought to the church council and also to the UN Commission for Multicultural Ministries board a couple of times and watered down. But I still believe that if you are talking about a multicultural church, you cannot just talk about only four communities. You have to talk about, is that what Deanne, you are talking about, the church truly become a multicultural church. You are dealing with four, leaving one outside of the door, and talk about a multicultural church doesn't make sense. But we are.
Why isn't there going to be a fifth desk? I mean, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I had not heard that before.
Oh, that has been a very, very interesting discussion and debate for a very long time. From the beginning, there was some folks within within all the four ethnic communities, there was some people felt very strongly that that would be an unhealthy relationship. And then also the question of power was there. Jody, don't you think? That was some of the people felt like, if there are five people sitting at the table and one person is white, and naturally you walk into the room, who has got the power? And some of us do believe that that doesn't have to happen all the time. It does not happen in many other circles we hang around. So we We fought about that for a very long time before I came as a staff, and then within the staff we tried and it never worked, and hope to God one day it will really happen. So,
well, right, but one thing that not having a white desk means that the burden for fighting racism then is placed on the four groups, and the whites are not held responsible.
Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Reason
that's one of our serious argument. That is, you, when you do not have the fifth person there, and you simply cannot do that. And
but what can we do about that? This is not the time. Yeah.
Sure. Yes. I think one day it will be a barrier for the church to really become multicultural. That's honestly, I believe in that.
But you know, this—it's not unlike the discussions that went on about whether or not there should be a women's organization in the ESCN. And the original plan of the Constitution did not have a women's organization. It said, "Look, this is the late 20th century. Come on, we don't need a women's organization. That's silly. Women should be part of the whole church." And it was the women of the church who said, wait a minute, we want to have a women's organization. It's still important, both to meet the needs of some women, their own needs, and to provide some women with a platform from which to work. And so that's why the Constitution then was altered before it was adopted to include it. So I suppose you could make a similar argument that this is, in Virginia Woolf's term, a room of one's own, where you can gather courage and wisdom and those things, and then go out from there. And there are good arguments on both sides. It's really a hard one.
There is a friend of mine whom I call more often for advice. He's a region 4 coordinator, Bruce Klitsky, who has got long experience in community minister. Probably you might all know Bruce. And he used to give me an advice. He used to say that you fight for things, but he said, but you always keep it on the paper. He said, there's a moment to put it on the table, there's a moment to put it on the chair, you know. But you never give up the stuff, you know. You bring it back. And so I believe the same thing with this. You know, there is a moment to fight, and we did. I thought it is really going to happen in 89 when the board was considering that, but there was strong opposition to that. But I think once people become comfortable with everybody sitting in the table and talk, and I think that may slowly change. So that's probably maybe my own wishful thinking. It will really happen. Any more questions? If you don't ask me, then I will keep on talking.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by the dialogue that you and Dave over here had.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, David is in Arizona.
Yep.
He's starting a mission that butts right up against an Indian reservation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what help are you giving him?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as he starts very intentionally
mm-hmm.
a congregation in a new city, which is right, surrounded by Indians, Native peoples. Have you had help from the church to do that?
Not that I'm aware of.
It seems to me it's at levels like that
right.
where intention.
Yep.
You know, in Arizona, there are three Native American people for every one Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the minority? You know.
Yeah.
In Arizona. And here we start, and we've got a number of churches there that are right on the Indian reservation butts up against the community, and there's a wall there.
Yeah. There is one of the things, David, probably it would be interesting is when we are, the six working groups I'm talking about. Number one is Ministries Development Working Group. Now, this you're talking about, this is all futuristic stuff, and I'm always very mindful that future belongs to God. At the same time, and when you have a job to do, about think about the future, and you also have to think about the future. And the Ministries Development Working Group. And the Ministries Development Working Group is looking into how we can do the ministry. There, Mac Minnick, who is the executive director for Division for Outreach, is chairing that working group. What they are, that working group is working on developing strategies, they looked at the whole ministry in the three areas. One is new ministry starts, that's where your work will come. Another one is ministry in transitional communities. Another one is ethnic-specific ministries. That's why they are developing strategies. One of the recommendations they are making is when we start new ministries, where from next year on, more than 30% of the new ministry starts in the ELCA will be in transitional communities. There are communities like your situation, where the pastor developer holding up there will be trained. And another plan was to do a mentoring system. That is, somebody, for example, in the same environment doing ministry, another part of the country will be linked with the person and help with that ministry, so that when we start a ministry, because we are starting a ministry in a particular geographical area, hoping that the ministry will develop with a large number of people, especially from African American or Asian or Hispanic Native American, people may join. And if it doesn't happen, then our initial effort is not worth. So that is an effort with which we will be moving. That will be an intentional effort with which we will be going. That's one of the strategies which are coming. But that is, you know, again, this time it doesn't happen again. So these are some of the things we are foreseeing will be coming out of that. So 2 years from now, when I come here, when you come, you can ask
them. Well, that's, I mean, that's, that was really the reason I asked you the question I did, because my perception, at least of the churches that I've been involved with, I mean, they may be near communities other than upper middle class white, but they're not in. And I think our church tends to, my community, our community is very close to an Indian reservation, but it's also a very high income white neighborhood. There, I doubt that there's 1.87% people of color in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, it appears to me that's how our church has tended to grow, is to put missions in areas like ours where they know within a year they'll be self-supporting and won't cost us anything. Whereas if they'd have located our church a half a mile farther south, the ELCA would have had to pay for it for a few years before it ever was thriving. And that's why I don't think, you know, I don't think the great majority of churches in white neighborhoods are going to make nearly the impact that the national church can make if we begin to start ministries in places where people are. Yeah. And we have tended, I think, in the past not to be.
Sure.
But I don't see the church really, I'm glad to hear that that's still a part of what Mac's talking about, but I mean, he was talking about that 2 years ago, and I still don't see the church doing an awful lot of it.
What another thing too, you know, I cannot give you a direct answer, this is what's going on, but so I can share with you some of the stuff which is coming up through the strategy effort. Another one is even starting new ministry. There were some other issues which you raised, which also we heard when we did the consultation, some of the surveys we did. One of the things, another plan is that hereafter, that is beginning 1991, when new ministry starts, they'll be decided not by the Division for Outreach staff in Chicago, but the deploy staff in consultation with the immediate community they are talking about doing a ministry. That meant that the local congregations and the communities will have a say in where do you select the site and where do you start the ministry. So far, that decision has been made in Chicago. That will stop. In fact, I was in Division for Outreach board meeting last time, and there the decision was, they were told this is where they'll be changing the direction, this is how the decisions will be made. That will be done locally, and where do you want to start the ministry, not in Chicago. So that may address some of the issues you raised, which has been raised in different parts of the country.
But then how do you keep that accountable also? I mean, I'm thinking about, there are places like Arizona, and there are places around the country, really, where you can't always count on that local entity to keep the church in good stead on that.
The church does not believe in lottery, but many times it does operate with a lottery system. This is what is happening. The church originally thought it is going to start around 100 new congregations a year. I don't know how they came up with this idea. Everybody blamed on Lutheran Laity movement. They said they came up with this plan. It is not a real ELCA plan. So anyway, the original plan was 100 new congregations. That was gone because it got arm and a leg to start a ministry. So they killed that one. Now, I'll come to you, Barbara, in a second. Then what they did was Lutheran Brotherhood and AAL gave millions of dollars for many ministry starts work. So every year we anticipate around 40 to 45 new congregations started. So that's where the lottery system comes. Now, all the synods send out their application. They say, yes, we think this is the right place to start. For, you know. So the ELCA says they will look at region and the mobility of population and all the stuff they will consider. And they will say, yeah, Rocky Mountain Synod will get 2 slots. So that's where the lottery has gone. You know, you got 2. And then of the 2 they're deciding, that's where the local communities will determine where and when they will start, where they will start the ministry. That's how they are coming up with. Because they don't have enough money to start and all over
that. Who's going to keep them honest?
I don't know. Probably Holy Spirit and the Holy Scriptures. Keep them honest.
We had 3 new starts in Phoenix. Yeah, 3 new congregations started in Phoenix in the last couple of years, and every one of them was in the community just like mine.
Yeah.
$100,000 homes and up, upper middle class white. And I'm sure that was much of the direction for where those starts happened came from Arizona.
Yeah. But, you know, that's true. At the same time, I never thought that I will stand up here defending division for outrage in my life. But things happen. But I should also say that the time it takes, you know, a lot of stuff which happened back, even like 19 this year, the decisions were made way up there 2-3 years ago. So it takes a lot of time. So we cannot totally blame on them either. Barbara, then we'll come back to the post.
Well, maybe you already covered this because I was on a dishy when I came in late. But
yeah, we covered that already.
Okay. We talked about dishy. Now, this is the one I struggle with, or one of the many. If I were a Native American person living in near Phoenix or near that congregation you're talking about, why would I want to become a Lutheran rather than, say, an Episcopalian, a member of a church that has a much better track record working with Native Americans? Or that would be the question one could ask about Holden, too. If I were an African-American person, there's no question about what Holden needs, more African-Americans and more multicultural people. But why would a black person want to come to a place like this that has such a white history? Or why would a Native American person want to become a Lutheran? I mean, all those questions. So that, you know, if I wanted to be a Christian, why wouldn't I go Episcopalian if I were a Native American? Or another denomination if I were an African American.
Mm-hmm. Number one, before you came, when you were washing dishes,
uh-huh.
We were talking about the same stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
That was the nature of the gospel and how Lutherans understood it. And that is why we talked about Lutheranism. When I was talking about Lutheranism, I'm not talking about Lutheranism practiced in North America. I was talking about the global Lutheranism, which grown faster in Africa and Asia, and in Latin America, we have close to 10 million people, Lutherans, living in those parts of the world. And it has been very well received, and one of the fastest growing Lutheran churches today is the Lutheran Church in Madagascar, right? And that is the situation. So what I'm saying is that the Lutheran theology has been embraced very, very with open hands by the peoples who live in Africa, in Asia, Latin America. So that is not the issue, right? So the theology, there's no problem with the theology. But what has been happening within the, say in this, for our conversation, the ELCA, is ELCA has been a welcoming church of African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American people. At this time, we do not have a climate in the church to welcome African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American people. That has been a barrier for this church truly becoming multicultural. So that is another issue we are addressing, along with reaching out to people. Because you can put a ministry right in the middle of a Native American reservation, but the church is not a church which is welcoming to people. We are not going to see any changes. And that's also a reality with which we are dealing with. I think that's one of the Dean also touched on earlier in her question about the whole thing. That is, the yields here has to position itself differently, which we will be coming out in the strategies as to this is how the church ought to do. It has to position itself differently. It has to look at all the ministries. That is why even when we are developing strategies, we are not just developing an evangelism strategy for the church. We are also developing a strategy for a transformation of ELCA. It's not just reaching out. That's not the only goal of the multicultural mission strategy. So it will affect all the ministries of the church. Yes, sir.
You mentioned in Africa and so forth, our Lutheran church is fast growing, one of the fastest. But could you also say there are other church denominations that maybe are even growing faster in those areas than the Lutheran church? I was just wondering, I mean, there's more probably Christian churches are increasing in the people in numbers, but how is our church doing compared to other denominations in those same areas?
I do not know about how other denominations are doing, but all I could tell you is the Lutheran membership, the global Lutheran membership is increasing in Africa and Asia. But I have no information whatsoever of how other denominations are doing. If anybody here knows anything about how the other...
Global Mission might be able to tell you.
Yeah. But I do not know. This is interesting. You all ask me a lot of questions, so I won't... That's all right. Okay. Yeah.
Just, you were mentioning this method by which they determine where new congregations are started, uh-huh. and you made reference to a figure of 30%
uh-huh.
as being possibly in these transitional right. areas. That seemed low to me. And probably yeah. it's because of the kinds of congregations that are started in these more upper class white areas. I don't know what, why wouldn't it be higher, I guess is my question. Mm-hmm.
The percentage of the new ministry starts. You're talking about percentage, right?
Yeah.
The CNLC, the commission which worked on designing the church, it said 20% of the new ministries will be in predominantly African American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American communities. But the Division for Outreach said we had to increase that number into 30%. One of the things which nobody will admit to this, but I know this is the real, that's the truth. And that's what David was touched on. That is, whenever you start new ministries, they always, this is where the business comes, you know. We talk about theology, we talk about Bible, and then we talk about business also. You know, we will not openly talk about that, but that's what's decided in the closet. That is, if when you start new ministries, if you start all ministries which will take 5 or 10 years to become self-sufficient, it is draining the dollar from Caesar's palace. So what you do is that you start ministries, you calculate in such a way that there will not be much money lost. That is, the congregation will start in an area like Davis, and so they'll become more near self-sufficient, so you got your money back. You know, so the balance that worn out, that's why this percentage is 30%. That meant that it will not put more tax on the church.
Which also places pressure on David.
Yeah.
I hate to pick on you today, David, but it places pressure on him because if he wanted to begin to move past the people who come in the door and really minister to your community as well as parishioners, there's a problem because at that point you risk your membership. And so your challenge then is how are you going to do ministry that really deals well with the whole issue of inclusiveness and yet protects what's in existence?
Although at least in a new church you have a chance of setting that tone from the start.
But it's risky business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's risky business. In Arizona, I mean, we spent 9 years there, and I'll tell you, it's risky business. And yet, it does have to be done. I mean, there have to be points at which someone is willing to risk it. But it isn't something I think that you would do in that neighborhood particularly because, I mean, right off the bat, because people are already threatened by the fact that the reservation is right there. I mean, you have to, I don't know how you do that carefully.
But that's where the transformation part goes hand in hand. You know,
I mean,
you can't
I believe
say,
in that. I think
we can't say, well, first we're going to get up to 10%, and then we're going to transform the other 90%. Because the other 90% has to be transformed
right.
as the 10% is met, or it's not good. Neither part will happen. It's to be simultaneous.
Yeah. On this 10% thing, I understand the importance of goal setting and that you have to have a measurable goal. Okay. But isn't there some inherent danger? Do you think in that? And that it's like, okay, we're at 10%. High fives. You know, go home. Type of thing. And why didn't the National Church set a progression towards which each congregation would be trying to be reflective of their community? Mm-hmm. Or was that just, we've got to make a goal for now and this is what we...
I read some of the old discussions about how all this came about. That is why they even put this one, that is within 10 years of its existence, 10% of its membership stuff. There are several reasons for them to make recommendation, coming up with a specific number. Number one was there was very lengthy discussion about the church has to change, it has to transform, it has to reach out, it has to become a church which represent the population in this country. That was the biggest concern of those people who are working in the CNLC. But they said, but if the church really wanted to move forward, it also has to have some very clear goals and directions and set goals. And that is why, I found David Hardy, he is one of the CNLC members. He is the one who made the recommendation. You are in the CNLC, isn't it?
No, oh. I've just sent in comments.
Oh, okay. he said that we have to set a goal, and that is a very realistic goal. Now, if the goal does not state that this is a 10%, then we'll quit doing business. It's not about at least 10%. So that was, they said, at least that is our goal. We'll work on that. And also they wanted to have a goal which is an achievable goal. That's also they were really concerned about. And they did. In fact, contrary to some of the things I heard, the people I heard when I came to this job, and I first wanted to find out, you know, what I'm getting into, you know. And so one of the things I read, some of the documents. I want to know whether anybody thought about why they came up with 10%, why the 5%, you know, why 20, why they came up with 10, is that they really look at this. In fact, they talked a lot of demographics and said, this is where the churches are located. What is a realistic number? And that's where they came up with this number. And there was a discussion anywhere from 5 to 15. That's the number they were looking at for a long time. So there was some very good studies done. And I do look at it. Now I look at the demographic study. And now if you look at this with the population trend in the church, I do think that is an achievable goal. It is how the congregations are going to be prepared. And that's what the whole problem is. Yeah.
We seem to be talking a lot about congregations, but I think it would be at least as important to ask about what about pastors. What are the seminaries doing to encourage pastors?
Yeah. The question you just asked me, when I did the consultation in 24 different cities, two issues were brought in as number one and two for the church to address. Number one was worship, they said. Remember I told you when I first went and asked all the congregations what are some other things the church ought to do? Number one, they said worship. Number two, they said leadership. And they said these are the two barriers in the church as for those people who are gathered there. And that's an important issue because our seminar does not teach except for you're right from PLTS? Oh, good. Because often anybody, except for PLT. PLTS is the only seminary, as I understand, does procure all the seminarians to take a quarter of one semester they have to spend in a culture other than their own and work with the people and do ministry. The rest of the seminaries do not procure that. And many, especially when I was in Pacific Northwest in consultation, Everybody, all the PLT students out there, I think pharmacy students, they all said, yeah, PLT is model. That's what we have to be doing in the church. And Lutheran Northwestern require one course. Pat Heifer teaches a course. Only in that course, the student has to spend time working with a person from another culture. So you can see very many, hardly any real training or equipment or students happening in seminaries. And that is what the leadership development working group is working on there, and will be making some recommendation on the same issue.
What's that, what James Moy is hired to do?
Right.
What is the Multicultural Commission doing in terms of alternate routes to ordination?
Alternate route to ordination. In the predecessor church bodies, it was very easy compared to what we have now. Anybody don't know what this alternate route to ordination here? Everybody knows.
No. You know.
Seems to me a couple of churches in San Francisco tried that.
alternate route to ordination, let me give you an example. Here I go to a Methodist school, which is not recognized by EOCA. I can go to the school, I finish my Master of Divinity degree, and then I wanted to come to the ELCA, to serve in ELCA. And ELCA will have an extensive process. You will go to several committees, meet to be examined by them, and then they recommend you to do several things. They will take you, saying that you are a good Lutheran, you will be a good Lutheran pastor, come on in. Or they will say, no, you spend a year in one of our seminaries to all kinds of things they can do. So that is an alternate route to ordination. Another one is, that's one example. I can give you another example, is a person who is a pastor, who is a Presbyterian pastor, because we have a lot of Korean people who are Presbyterian, because Presbyterian is a very strong denomination in Korea, but the Presbyterian church in Korea is quite different than the Presbyterian church we have in this country. And when they come, there are quite a few are interested in becoming part of the Lutheran church. When they wanted to go become a Lutheran church, then they also had to go through the same process, even though they are pastors, in becoming a Lutheran pastor. So that's simply put very, that's called alternate route to ordination. That is, they have not gone through the regular way of going to seminary. They came through somewhere else. So the church will fix them. They can use a cookie cutter and make them a Lutheran. So that's what alternate route to ordination. Now the alternate route to ordination, it is very tight now, because you have to go through a very rigorous process of getting into the ELCA with the new alternate route to ordination. I, for one, believe in alternate route to ordination, and I do believe that that's one of the ways we may be able to pick up quite a few pastors, especially to do ethnic-specific ministry, especially among Asian people, Chinese and Korean, for example, where we have quite a few able people from other denominations, which we will be able to absorb with that process. But there is not very open welcome in the church for alternate route, even though people may be saying, yes, we are, but in reality, it is not. That's one thing. Another one, the Hispanic community will be benefit immensely with alternate route to ordination process. So
do you see the commission pushing that?
The commission, the commission supports the proposal which came through Division for Ministry in alternate route to ordination. So the commission in official stance supports the process developed by Division for Ministry. Yeah.
We want to hear about your six groups, but we have to go now.
Oh my gosh!
Is there a time when we?
Yeah, I need more. Let's go on a hunger strike or something tomorrow. Get more time. You know, tomorrow I'm doing the same thing, but it'll be more exciting than today. And I will speak very little tomorrow, so you all can talk. And tomorrow we will deal with that tomorrow. So make sure you come. We are out of time.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you for coming and keeping awake.